This is Answers in Genesis in the United Kingdom.
The whole world believed it, and now we teach it in schools. But if you're taken in by original sin, why they'll say you're just a bunch of fools. Keep on hearing monkey business. Keep on speaking monkey business. Keep on seeing monkey business. Keep on seeking monkey business.
Isn't that marvellous? That's a track called Monkey Business from an early 80s gospel band called Three Point Turn. We'll have a little bit more of that later. But you know, there's been quite a lot of monkey business going around lately. On the media, we've had Darwin's birthday recently, and I seem to have been run off my feet doing media interviews, television interviews all over the place. I was interviewed on Al Jazeera, I was interviewed on Premier Radio. I was able to present a bit more home from home, really. I was able to present a two-hour phone-in program on Genesis TV, and perhaps most significantly, I was invited to be a guest on the Big Question programme on BBC One on Sunday, February the 8th. And this programme was broadcast live from Southampton. And it was an interesting programme. There wasn't really a lot of time to debate the issues. There were three very big questions, only one of which was to do with Darwin and evolution, and they were being discussed in the space of an hour, so there were really only 20 minutes to discuss this really very, very important question. But it's very interesting how things work out. The presenter of the programme, Nikki Campbell, gives every impression to me of being really rather anti-Christian in his attitudes and in his biases. And, well, just see for yourself what you make of his first question to me.
Now, Paul Taylor, you believe that the Earth is just 6,000 years old. Darwin's theory is fantastically brilliant, and it has been vindicated by DNA evidence. We are as closely related to monkeys as tigers are to lions. You're flying in the face of science here.
Well, what do you think? Does that seem like an unbiased question to you? It was extremely loaded. Later on, when he'd asked a question of another participant, I got a comment from this participant about ages of the Earth. When he turned to me, instead of allowing me to comment on the ages of the Earth, he wanted to ask me about dinosaurs. But perhaps we should listen to that other participant to the program. Julian Hume from the Natural History Museum brought along a couple of fossils with him, and notice how he claimed that these fossils were several million years old. Let's have a listen to what he has to say.
This is a slab of rock from the Jurassic about 170 million years ago, and this is in fact a fossil. This is a thing called an ammonite, and this is something that may have looked like something like this. This is long extinct. We have dated the rocks, radiometric dating, accurately dating this example, which shows that the Earth was much older than 6,000 years old.
Do you hear the scientific evidence in that clip? Let's just listen to part of that clip again so that we can comment on it.
We have dated the rocks, radiometric dating, accurately dating this example, which shows that the Earth was much older than 6,000 years old.
Did you hear him say that the rock had been radiometrically dated? Let's just come back to that point in a minute, but let's just concentrate for a minute on the fact that he said that the rock had been dated accurately. He then didn't actually tell us what the accurate date was for that rock. What's the definition of the word accurate? Are they accurate within a few billion years, a few million years, or perhaps to the nearest day? What do we actually mean by accurate? To actually just say that and then not give the figure doesn't really tell us anything, because we didn't hear anything about how old the rock was supposed to be. All he wanted to say was that he thought the rock was more than the 6,000 years allowed for by the Bible, but he didn't tell us how the rock was dated. He simply used the term radiometric dating. Now, it's quite common for me to get emails into work telling me that fossils have been discovered which have been carbon dated. Now, Julian Hume didn't make that mistake, but let's just address that error for a moment, because actually, when I always send emails back saying, well, no, they haven't. You haven't got fossils that have been carbon dated. Even if you believe in that length of time scale, carbon dating doesn't actually date anything more than approximately 100,000 years old. The half-life of carbon-14 is just less than 6,000 years. Therefore, after 10 half-lives, you've got none left. So that would be 60,000 years, just add a little bit more for good luck. After 100,000 years, you're going to have nothing there that you can measure whatsoever. So nothing can be carbon dated that old. Now, of course, Julian Hume didn't make that error, but he did make the error of saying that the rocks were carbon, were radiometrically dated. I beg your pardon, not carbon dated, but radiometrically dated. Now, that's very disingenuous, because the rocks have not been radiometrically dated. How do I know that? Because radiometric dating is something that works on igneous rocks. Well, actually, personally, I don't think it works. There are very strong reasons why I don't think it works. We can go into some technical information if you wish. I'm not sure that's relevant, really, to this particular radio broadcast. So if you want to look at the fine details of the science behind radiometric dating and the assumptions that are included there, please have a look at the Answers in Genesis website. I suggest you use the search engine and you go and have a look at radiometric dating, or maybe even see if you can find some of the articles about the RATE group, R-A-T-E, which stands for Radioactivity and the Age of the Earth. And there's a group of people there who have done some research on radiometric dating and analyzed the various assumptions that are made for that. But you see, even if radiometric dating did work, it would work on igneous rocks. Well, fossils are not found, by definition, in igneous rocks. Igneous rocks are the ones from the volcanoes. Fossils, by definition, are sedimentary. They're there because sediment has been laid down. Now, there's all sorts of things that we could have challenged with the rocks there, but I wasn't given any opportunity to challenge. But nevertheless, sedimentary rock is not susceptible to radiometric analysis, and therefore the comments that Julian Hume made on that program was at the very least disingenuous, and possibly worse, was just simply not true. Well, let's move on now, because one of the next panelists to have an opportunity to speak was Professor Peter Atkins. Now, he is a professor of chemistry at Oxford University, and very much a radical atheist, close friend of our good friend Professor Richard Dawkins. Basically, if they can't find Richard Dawkins for something, then they'll wheel out Pete Atkins instead. Listen to what he has to say about the Bible, and just press the buzzer any time you think that there's anything being said, which is rather patronising.
Okay, I think the Bible is rather wonderful in some respects, in its use of language and so on, and it's in its identification of the big questions like we're talking about today.
Yeah.
But it was written from a viewpoint of ignorance, total ignorance, a couple of thousand years ago, parts of it even older than that. Since then, science has progressed. And we've looked for evidence. We've dug up fossils. And not only have we dug up fossils, we've gone beyond fossils into the world of molecules. And we can see that these two streams of evidence flowing from quite disparate sources, where they converge, never conflict.
We really ought at that point just to stop and analyse the use of the word evidence. You see, What people like Professor Atkins are deliberately forgetting at this point is the difference between observational science and historical science. Observational science is that type of science which talks about what goes on in the laboratory. It's to do with taking measurements, to do with looking at observations, things that you can report on that can be repeated. Now that's observational science. Historical science is something that cannot actually be repeated, because you're talking about events that are supposed to have happened, alleged to have happened at some point in the past, one-off events. Therefore, they're not susceptible to scientific analysis. So when Atkins is talking about evidence, he's deliberately mixing unlike things together, because he's talking as if he were an observational scientist, but he's not actually referring to observational science. He's talking about things that are happening in the past that are supposedly one-off events. Now, that's not susceptible to scientific analysis. The only way you could really know anything about something that happened in the past is if you had the documentary evidence. And you see, we do have the documentary evidence, because after all, we have no scientific proof either of creation, but we do have the documentary evidence. And that's why he's so wrong to actually dismiss the Bible simply by saying it's an old document. The very antiquity of the document is actually its strength, because it is therefore providing the documentary evidence where the scientific evidence is not possible. We can't go back and recreate the conditions of the creation, and Atkins can't go back and recreate his imagined ideas about evolution. So all you need is the documentary evidence. It's a bit like, you know, what I might say about myself. How do you know that I was born in 1961? My mother has died recently, so you can't ask her. The midwife who was present is no longer with us. You can't do any scientific analysis on me and find out when exactly I was born. What you do is you get the documentary evidence, my birth certificate. And in the same way, in order to find out what happened in the past, we need the documentary evidence, not scientific evidence. And so the concept about evidence that Atkins talks about is not correct. By the way, you'll notice that he's trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. He talks about the fossil evidence and the molecule evidence, but he doesn't actually go into giving any analysis about what those things are. He just hopes that no one will pick up on them, and of course nobody can. Nobody's given the opportunity to pick up on what he's saying. He's actually talking nonsense, to be perfectly honest, at that point. There is no molecular evidence for evolution. The fossil evidence for evolution only works if you start by previously believing in the theory of evolution anyway. Well, when we come back, we'll listen to a little bit more of what Professor Pete Atkins has to say, and a few more of the contributors from the program, the big questions from the 8th of February 2009, including the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Lord George Carey. We'll have to see what he has to say as he twists scripture to try and attempt it to make it agree with the theory of evolution. That's coming up after this. All this Genesis and creation and evolution stuff confuse you? What you need is a subscription to The Answers magazine. The Answers magazine is published once a quarter and contains beautifully illustrated articles and news items. They're easy to read, though there are some semi-technical articles too to add a bit of meat. They'll help you to be able to answer the news items that come up on the television, radio and newspapers, and in particular over conversations around the water cooler. A year's subscription to the magazine, 4 issues, costs just £14, but you can even get 50p off. You can get it for £13.50 if you mention, when you try and buy the magazine, that you heard this advert on episode 4 of Answers UK Radio. Just fill in a little box, the comment box on the website order form, on answersingenesis.org, The Answers magazine.
This is Answers in Genesis in the United Kingdom.
Since then, science has progressed, and we've looked for evidence. We've dug up fossils, and not only have we dug up fossils, we've gone beyond fossils into the world of molecules, and we can see that these two streams of evidence flowing from quite disparate sources, where they converge, never conflict.
Welcome back.
That was Professor Pete Atkins talking on the Big Question programme on Sunday the 8th of February, a programme that I was invited to take part in. And Pete Atkins is a chemistry professor and a radical atheist and evolutionist. And he's talking about evidence, which we analysed just before the break. We saw that what he's talking about here is really doesn't actually hold water, because he doesn't actually give any evidence. He merely expects you to accept what he says because of his position as a scientist. Now, he talks about the concept of science once or twice, and really tries to lay it on quite thick as to what science is about. He's really using the argument from authority. We have to accept what he says because he's a scientist, and other people who are not scientists do not have the intellectual capacity to be able to argue against him. He actually almost states that almost exactly shortly. But let's just listen a little bit more to his comments about the Bible and its relationship to the theory of evolution. And he comes out with a very telling comment about what sort of God you have to believe in if you're going to believe the theory of evolution.
And so we're very confident, without prejudice. Prejudice is present in science to suggest ideas.
You know the truth, though.
We know the truth.
But the question we're actually addressing, can you believe in the Bible and believe in the theories of evolution? Is it not possible, do you think, to step back and admire the majesty of the process of evolution and to ascribe it to God's work?
Well, if it were God's work, he chose a particularly nasty way of going about it. Because in order for species to evolve, you need death, you need conflict, you need one animal to drag another animal apart. And I think it's the evidence for a most malign God, if there is a God.
Really?
Also appearing on the programme was Lord George Carey. Now, when he was just plain George Carey, he was the Archbishop of Canterbury. He was the Archbishop of Canterbury immediately before the current incumbent, Rowan Williams. And George Carey was on the programme because he's got a reputation as being an evangelical Anglican, as somebody who believes the Bible to be true. Now, I want you to listen, therefore, to what he's got to say about why he believes the theory of evolution. And you'll notice he doesn't really attempt to give any biblical exegesis at any point in what he says.
We owe so much to it in terms of our literature, our history, our moral formation, and so on. But I believe that both Darwin and the Bible are right, because they're talking about two completely different entities. I never, when I became a young Christian, I didn't believe in creationism. I was brought up to understand evolution. I accept it. The Bible is telling us in really a pre-scientific way about the origin of the earth, but actually is terribly symbolic. And we've only got to look at Genesis 1.
The survival of the fittest, the brutality of it.
We've only got to think of Genesis 1 to 3 and look at Adam. Adam means earth, Eve, the mother living, 7 days. That's talking about perfection, that kind of thing.
I just find this whole business of trying to reanalyze what the Bible says to try and slam evolution into it to be rather depressing. And it's a shame, really, as to what Lord Carey goes on to say now, because he doesn't really address the question. Nowhere does he say anything about the truth of Scripture. It's all really about how to marry the two things together.
So you're talking about completely two ways of understanding reality and
right.
Divine truth.
So, Lord Carey, what's your understanding of the process of evolution? Did God set it in motion, set it in train, and watch it happening and take its random course? Or did he intervene at all stages?
Evolution is talking about moving towards a destination.
But it's a divine plan, presumably.
It means that there is intelligence through the process. Yes, some evil things is part of the process. But you're not going to prove the existence of God simply by natural science. We've got to bring philosophy into this. We've got to bring so many other forms of knowledge into it. And part of the problem of Richard Dawkins, they've actually so isolated the debate and taken over, instead of having a really serious conversation between people of faith and people of no faith, it's now become a very bad argument indeed.
Oh, but what about Professor Atkins?
There speaks a frightened man.
Did you notice Professor Atkins' comments at the end when he accuses Lord Carey of being a frightened man? Well, let's listen on.
speaks a frightened man.
No, I'm not a frightened at all.
No.
I'm a person dealing with... You're
clearly frightened by the accumulation of evidence that has grown over the past 200 or 300 years, and we have swept aside the preconceptions of the Bible, and we have shown that by rational thought we can understand the emergence of this wonderful thing, the whole biosphere. And we take the view that there is not one jot of evidence for the intervention of a God.
Well, there you have it. That's so interesting, isn't it? That there's an atheistic evolutionist who doesn't believe that really Darwinism is compatible with a belief in God. And I think really that theistic evolutionists need to take note of that. Well, I did get a chance to have a bit of a response myself, and here's what I said.
But there we are. Archbishop of Canterbury has no problem. Well, combining belief in evolution with belief in the Bible, why
evidence is something that is interpreted, and you've heard Professor Atkin's particular interpretation, because he starts from a point of view of not believing in God. He starts from a particular viewpoint,
but
a particular way of looking at it.
But the former Archbishop of Canterbury, if it's good enough for him, why can't it be good enough for you? Why can't you stand back just see the wonder of it all? It's a miraculous process.
I see the wonder of it all, and I have no problem in accepting people who disagree with me on this as fellow Christians. I have great respect for Lord Carey. But one of the interesting things, actually, that Professor Atkins mentioned, which is a very, very important point, is that if you believe in an evolution of death and disease and suffering, then this does actually show a malignant God. But it's not the God that I believe in, because the death came into the world, according to the Bible, because of Adam's sin. And therefore, if we believe that that's how death came into the world, you can see the reason for Jesus dying on the cross.
Well, after that comment, Professor Atkins made himself a little bit unpopular with the audience by talking about people believing in God and believing in the Bible as being intellectually lazy. Let's hear what he has to say.
You might not like being told that you are intellectually lazy, but I'm afraid that is the truth.
At least for once in a way, Nicky Campbell did pick him up on that and asked him about whether this was the arrogance of science. Just listen to what he has to say on that point.
Now, the Archbishop will say, if I can put words into your mouth...
Don't.
God provided...
Is this the arrogance of science?
I'm afraid it is. But what's wrong with arrogance when you're right?
Okay.
What's wrong with arrogance when you're right? The ultimate in arrogant comments, especially as he quite clearly is not right. He's a man who knows nothing about truth and nothing about what God says in his word. Well, it has been heavy going. I think it's time for a little bit of light relief. I was recently sent a marvellous CD from a rock gospel band from the early 80s called Three Point Turn. And their lead singer and writer wrote this marvellous track on the subject of evolution and Darwinism. And we heard a little snatch of it before. Let's hear the whole of this track. It's called Monkey Business, and the group is called Three Point Turn.
Darwin conceived it, the whole world believed it, and now we teach it in schools. But if you're taken in by original sin, why they'll say you're just a bunch of fools. Keep on hearing monkey business, keep on speaking monkey business, keep on seeing monkey business, keep on seeking monkey business. Man from the ape, and the ape from the fish, and the fish from the chemical slime. Just avoid the creator, the proofs will come later, it's only a question of time. Keep on hearing monkey business, keep on seeing monkey business, keep on speaking monkey business, keep on seeking monkey business. Just look around you, are things improving? Has utopia come? monkey business. We keep on seeing monkey business. We keep on speaking monkey business. We keep on seeking monkey business.
Marvellous. That's 3-point turn and monkey business. And I'd like to thank the lead singer and writer of songs for that band, Paul Naylor. That rhymes, doesn't it? Paul Naylor, Paul Taylor. Well, I'd like to thank Paul Naylor for sending me that track and allowing us to use it on this podcast. That's marvellous. So if you want to find out more about that band, they were going around in the early 1980s, but the CD is available and was put together and released last year. So it's very much available. You can find that at their website, www.3pointturn.co.uk. That's www.3pointturn.co.uk. Please have a look at our website, answersingenesis.org. That's answersingenesis.org. If you want to help with things on this program, you've got ideas of things for the program or questions you want to ask, then do address them to radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. Notice on the email address that you need to put .uk at the end. That's radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. And keep your iTunes or other podcasting software up to date, and stay tuned because there'll be another podcast very soon and you don't want to miss it. But for now, thank you very much for listening. Good night and God bless.